Taxpayers in Tampa Bay have never given the green light to a transit rail system, but maybe fast, cheap buses will prove more popular. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. Tampa Bay has the dubious distinction of being the largest metro area in the country without any kind of local passenger rail service. So as our rush hour commutes crawl to a standstill, transportation planners are taking a shot at another kind of mass transit. Florida Matters' Steve Newborn reports on bus rapid transit.
Anyone who's wrestled with rush hour in the Tampa Bay area knows the morning and afternoon routine. White knuckles on the steering wheel, hours wasted on the road. Emily Henke lives in Riverview and commutes every weekday to Tampa. She's a planner, so she knows a thing or two about the dire outlook for improving transportation.
It's probably one of the worst in the country, if not the worst. It's the worst funded, it's the worst used. I feel bad for everybody who is forced to take public transit in Tampa. It's completely pitiful.
Henke took the time recently to drive to a public meeting at the new Tampa Armature Works, which you only can reach by car. There, some of the plans for the future of Tampa Bay transportation were unveiled. One thing became clear. Our dalliance with light rail, which is a modern version of streetcars, is still years away, if at all. And a gussied-up bus system called Bus Rapid Transit, or BRT, may be the region's only hope for any kind of mass transit in the future. Bus Rapid Transit would use its own lanes on a rebuilt Howard Franklin Bridge and parts of the median of Interstate 275. The rest of the 41-mile route would use the interstate shoulder to skirt traffic jams. The cost, around $455 million. That's $4 billion cheaper than the projected cost of light rail. And although BRT could become a reality in 5 years, the new span of the bridge won't be done until the mid-2020s. Brad Miller is CEO of the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority.
Basically, almost every metro area that has had a successful transit investment program has started with a sort of catalyst project, as we're calling this BRT system, where they start with something the public sees that it benefits them, and they want more.
Miller believes light rail will happen eventually, but since the state is planning to expand Interstate 275, he says having a bus system connecting Wesley Chapel, Tampa, and St. Petersburg is realistically the only way to go now. Since 2010, voters have rejected sales tax increases to pay for mass transit systems, once in Pinellas and twice in Hillsborough. The Department of Transportation is still contemplating commuter rail service on existing CSX tracks, but that would only connect downtown Tampa with the University of South Florida. Ray Shiramonte is head of TBARTA, the Tampa Bay Area Regional Transit Authority. Will people willingly give up their cars to ride on a bus? He says yes.
Because the buses they're talking about do not resemble the local buses at all. It actually looks like rail. They would have probably forward-facing seats and things for more long-distance travel, quieter, smoother. So it's a different experience.
Back at the Tampa Armature Works, Jim Hartnett scans the maps arrayed against the bare brick walls.
Almost every community around the country has had to put a referendum a few times at the ballot before it finally gets passed.
But fast-moving technology has a way of making even the most advanced plans moot. Shiramonte is among a growing chorus of planners who believe autonomous vehicles may soon rule the roads.
I do think we're in a disruptive period right now where we're not sure where transportation is going to go, kind of like when the car first came out. And I think within a decade, this will all settle down.
He says when cars first were invented, it was looked at like a novelty for rich people, but it ended up kicking horses back into the stable and changing our entire way of life. Autonomous vehicles, he says, may do that again. For Florida Matters, I'm Steve Newborn.
We asked for your feedback on the bus rapid transit plans as well, and we're going to be hearing your comments throughout the show. And here in the studio with us to talk about bus rapid transit, Dennis Heinbaugh is the Program Director for Transit Research at Qatar, the Center for Urban Transportation Research, also the Director of Qatar's National Bus Rapid Transit Institute. Dennis, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Brad Miller is the CEO of the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. Brad, hello.
Hi, Robin.
Sharon Calvert is the co-founder of the Hillsborough County Tea Party and a longtime critic of expensive transit projects. Sharon, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Brad, in Steve Newborn's story, you say you see this as a catalyst project. And what do you mean by that? And why are you excited about these buses?
Well, over in Pinellas County, we are implementing the first rapid transit service of any kind after 55 failed attempts in the Tampa Bay area called our Central Avenue BRT. Along Pinellas County's highest ridership route, Central Avenue, between downtown St. Petersburg and the beaches. We feel that that project, which is now advanced in the federal process, will be a catalyst for then what the region is now talking about, this 41-mile proposed bus rapid transit system along the interstate.
And so, Sharon, in a recent blog post, you say, quote, transit ridership is declining, vehicle ownership is increasing, vehicle miles traveled is increasing, innovation is disrupting traditional transit, and less than 2% use transit in Tampa Bay. Is this a chicken and egg situation, do you think, if only 2% use transit because transit needs to be better in order for more people to use it?
Well, I mean, right now the national trend is ridership is declining. In Hillsborough County, we do have a transportation issue, and I think everybody agrees with that. But a lot of it is peak traffic, and we have bottlenecks, especially if you're looking on the same route from Wesley Chapel to downtown St. Pete, the interstate choke points. FDOT's going to actually try to mitigate that before they replace the Howard Franklin Bridge.
So, Dennis, could you give us some details on the actual bus rapid transit route?
I mean, what's happening in Tampa is unique. I mean, we are taking advantage of all the possible advantages of BRT. We're operating in mixed traffic. We're operating on a dedicated right-of-way. We're operating in the shoulder lane. Those are all things that a rail system could not do.
People say it's flexible. It's a flexible way to do transit.
Correct.
So the buses would be using dedicated lanes plus shoulders. So they're finding all kinds of ways to keep costs down then, I guess.
Yeah, it really is taking advantage of the interstate system that the Florida DOT has planned with dedicated toll lanes, express toll lanes across the Howard Franklin Bridge connecting our counties. And why not provide a transit option in that already paid for, built infrastructure?
Mm-hmm. So it's got, what, something like 23 stops?
21.
So you'll be stopping a lot.
There's a stop. Of course, they'll probably have different services. But, I mean, there's a stop literally, take the bridge out because you can't stop, every 1.6 miles. So when you do look at that, you wonder about the rapid. But I'm assuming they'll have multiple services, an express service.
You do wonder about the rapid. I mean, are you going to get there any quicker than?
Well, that's the whole point, is to make it rapid by having less stops. I mean, the simplest systems in the nation have stops every half mile. Right now, if you went to a local bus service in Pinellas or Hillsborough, there'd be a stop every other block.
So right. A mile and a half is good then,
oh,
is what you're saying.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, like on our Central Avenue BRT, we already have a service, a trolley that runs that same exact corridor, but it stops, as Dennis says, at almost every block, it seems. And it takes over an hour to go just that distance because there's just so many stops. This rapid transit, our system only has 17 stops, and with signal preemption to allow the buses to go through the traffic signals, require the passenger to pay for their fare before they get on the vehicle, like a rail system, that will speed it up, we think, by about a third. It'll be a third faster than the existing route.
So now, when would the Pinellas part of this be built? You're looking at this being the first little
right.
branch
so the,
of it.
From the beach to downtown St. Pete, we're hoping to have that up and running in 2 years, by 2020. And then this longer, more regional system, that'll have to wait until the new Howard Franklin Bridge is built. And as Sharon mentioned, the DOT has a number of improvements to the choke points planned. You know, lots of the comments about that ridership is declining, there's a lot of new technology that is out there that wasn't there before, I think make this bus rapid transit proposal more possible because it is more flexible. Unlike a rail system where you're kind of you're invested in it and then it's permanent forever.
And people, I guess, would feel they could change it up a bit because it only costs $450 million, which sounds like a lot, but compared to a $4 billion light rail system, it's much less expensive, Dennis.
Another thing is that with bus rapid transit, you can implement it in stages. We don't have to wait for the, like a rail system, you'd have to wait till the yard was built and the whole system was built. With the bus rapid transit, right now we could already operate from Wesley Chapel to downtown using the shoulder lanes and using just the free flow lanes going up along 275. So there's no having to wait a long period of time until it's fully constructed.
But sure. I still get concerned about the ridership estimates because I believe there was actually a study that was out on the Cutter website where they looked at a number of the new BRT systems. They looked at the cost estimates and the ridership estimates. And while the cost estimates on BRT weren't as wildly off as the rail projects, there was still the inaccuracy of the ridership estimates. And the regional BRT from Wesley Chapel to downtown St. Pete, they're saying it's 3.3 million annual, but that's 9,800 riders a day. So even if you're spending $500 million with a million people moving to the Tampa Bay area, what is that actually going to do?
We did ask for comments from our listeners, and a lot of the comments that we got back were something like, where's our rail? You know, let's get with the modern times. Let's do rail. Let's not fool around with this. But let's hear from Gloria, and she says basically a bird in the hand.
Hello, my name's Gloria Corrigan, and I'm a regular transit rider in Pinellas County. In a perfect world, I'd love to see us have light rail, but I understand that bus rapid transit may be the most cost-effective and fastest to implement for regional transit, something which we desperately need in the Tampa Bay area. So I'm very glad that they are not letting perfect be the enemy of good, and I support bus rapid transit.
So, Dennis, is the push now, I think Brad was talking a little bit about doing things with smaller projects. So is the push now for incremental projects rather than trying to do a big, large-scale project like Greenlight Pinellas?
Absolutely. As I've mentioned to others, I've been here 35 years, and I've seen us go through always wanting to build the biggest and the best and be like some other city in the country. And here we are 35 years later, and we have no major improvements. We have to start with the Catalyst and other projects. Hillsborough's looking, you know, at more Metro Rapid. So we have to start small, and we have to continue on.
Certainly, rail has been very successful in every other city but the Tampa Bay area, and maybe that will be in our future someday. But this is a proposal, the first regional rapid transit proposal that we've seen here, and this can be done using existing or planned funding streams without having to go to a referendum.
And well, I think the elephant in the room still is how to fund this. I mean, that's the big question that nobody really wants to talk about. And I think when you have the cost out there on the regional BRT, you need your cost updated into current year dollars. You need to make sure that you include your financing costs and your maintenance and, you know, down the road that has to be paid for. So the public literally needs to scrutinize what all the costs are, and they need to be as accurate as possible. And that's, you know, been my concern, that the cost end up being underestimated. And, you know, we have a transportation problem, but do we really have a regional transit issue? Because most transit needs is local.
But from what I've seen, everything I've seen is these are very conservative estimates. I feel very comfortable in what I've read and what I've participated in the public workshops that these numbers are on the high end and that they're conservative in nature. But I also agree with what Sharon said earlier, that this is not by itself the fix for the region. We also have to greatly improve our public transportation systems in every county, in every city. Our local bus system is the backbone to our public transportation, and it needs to feed this regional system. So there's a much bigger picture out there. This is not by itself.
Somebody has to pay for it.
The question of who wants to pay for this came up with one of our listeners, Dan. Let's hear his take.
I've lived in all three counties around the Bay and would love to see more mass transit options. As a taxpayer, I'm more than happy to contribute to that, since it not only benefits me and gets me out of traffic, which I hate, but also cuts down on our carbon footprint and maybe cuts down on some congestion on the highways.
Dennis, that's what I'm not really getting. Is this going to take any congestion off the roads? I mean, it'll give a nice choice to someone who doesn't feel like taking their car in maybe that day, and they'll have a nice bus to take that day. But who is this helping? Is this going to help the rest of us in our commute on I-75?
It's options. We have to give everybody every option they can have, depending on their situation, their financial situation, their daily situation. Not too many things in the transportation industry fix congestion. They move it around. They change it slightly. So, again, this is not meant to be the...
What this does is, as we all know who travel across the bridge to Tampa or to St. Pete, some days it can be pretty congestion-free, and you may be able to get from St. Pete to Tampa in, I don't know, 30, 35 minutes. And then some days it's 3 hours. And if we have a lane, a dedicated lane, or running in the express lanes that are congestion free, we can have a consistent trip.
I'm Robin Sussingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. I'm Robin Sussingham, and we're talking about bus rapid transit in Tampa Bay. Here in the studio with us, Dennis Heinbaugh is the Program Director for Transit Research at Cutter, the Center for Urban Transportation. He's also the director of Cutter's National Bus Rapid Transit Institute. Brad Miller is the CEO of the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. Sharon Calvert is co-founder of the Hillsborough County Tea Party, and she has some criticism of transit projects in the area. So, Brad, I could see this making a lot of sense for you, for downtown St. Pete to the St. Pete Beach, that small area. I mean, I could see that bringing in a lot of economic activity to the businesses. You've got people, you know, who spend the day at the beach that can run up, get on the bus and run up to downtown and go to a restaurant and go to shops or vice versa.
Right. Well, yeah, certainly I think what you're addressing is the tourist economy that is in Pinellas in a big way. And that was a big sell on this project as we sought federal funding in Washington, D.C. Workers who work along the beach and in downtown St. Pete and tourists. The number one request we always get is for express services to the hotels along the beach. And this is the start. The other request we always get is, well, why don't you have any service to the airport?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the connection across the Howard Franklin Bridge will provide.
Right.
Is for the first time you'll be ultimately able to have a connection from the airport to the Gulf beaches.
All right. As far as funding, Sharon also pointed out that the city of St. Petersburg Beach did not vote to commit money for the project, but the application for the federal funds states they're paying $1.5 million. In the Tampa Bay Business Journal, the St. Pete Beach mayor, Al Johnson, says, to be honest, there's no way in hell I'm going to give them $1.5 million. As much as I'd like to have it, it's just not worth it to us. So is that important? Is that $1.5 million? It kind of indicates a buy-in from them, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, the PSDA board that I report to has asked that the city of St. Pete Beach have ownership in the proposal. But luckily for the mayor, we're not asking for $1.5 million anymore. We're asking for an investment over time in the operating costs that will be along the beaches. And we're asking for direct payments from the hotels and the businesses along the line there in St. Pete Beach as well.
And I also get concerned on the Central Avenue BRT that they are taking a 13 miles of a lane of general purpose traffic out. I hope that those, you know, along that route and that area understand that and know the impact.
Yeah, well, actually what we're proposing is taking one of three lanes and turning it into a what we're calling a business access and transit lane, where cars turning left into businesses and turning left onto perpendicular streets can still use that lane. Just no through traffic in that lane, because that'll be the dedicated lane for the BRT. So our studies have not shown that there will be a significant reduction in overall traffic speeds.
The only issues we've seen with BRT around the country is related to the dedicated lane is enforcement, that cars who aren't supposed to be there mm-hmm. will travel in that lane,
right.
and they won't be issued tickets. Some of the transit systems are putting cameras in the front of their buses to record the license plate, and then you're issued a ticket at a later date.
So, Dennis, I wanted to ask you, you're familiar with bus rapid transit projects in other areas of the country. How has that experience gone?
Well, it's been about 20 years in the making. There's now about 40 bus rapid transit systems in the U.S. I would venture to guess that every middle to large size transit system is either planning or operating a BRT system.
So I'm just curious, because on the Qatar website, the bus rapid transit part of the Qatar website, it says BRT is a, quote, public transit solution that can achieve the performance and benefits of more expensive rail modes. That's saying a lot. So why are we still talking about rail then? Why are we talking about this being a first step and then rail coming next?
Well, I'm not sure that we are all talking about that. I think,
The transportation official who was speaking at when the unveiling of this plan said, this is the first step. Next, we want to look at rail running from St. Petersburg to USF.
Yeah, I think a lot of that discussion over the years, the last 5 or 6 years, has been about rail's demonstration in a fixed guideway to incentivize transit-oriented development, or the development around the stations of rail in many cities, in Washington, D.C., down in Miami, is obvious. And then the question is whether a bus system, a rubber-tired system that can be moved, is a developer going to develop around that? That's why this idea of having a dedicated right-of-way or using the dedicated lanes in an existing corridor, you can make a bus rapid transit system just as fixed and incentivize development if you do it right as a rail system.
And they have shown in many times over in Boston and Cleveland and other areas that the development along the BRT line has been very much the same as their light rail or commuter rail line. In Cleveland, they make a claim that the newspaper checked up on the Cleveland dealer, I believe, was that it was $5 billion in investment along the corridor of the health line.
So they're thinking that the bus stops are going to attract the same kind of transit-oriented development as a rail station?
There's no reason for it not to. It's a permanent solution. It's just light rail without overhead electrical.
Exactly.
There is no difference in how the service is operated. It can operate in the middle lane. It can operate it in dedicated.
Right.
There is just no difference.
But it isn't permanent. That's what has been considered such a benefit of it, that it's so flexible that if they decide to discontinue the line or move it somewhere else, that it can be done, where if you have a fixed rail system, that's not going anywhere.
I'd like to use the word flexible, not that the line would be changed, because I don't know of any examples in the U.S. where a BRT system was implemented and then it failed and then was moved to a different street. That doesn't happen. The flexibility is then that, say that you're operating in a dedicated lane and an accident occurs from outside that lane and happens in your dedicated lane, the vehicle is flexible that it could leave that lane, go around the accident, then come back into that lane. If an accident happens along a rail corridor,
you're stuck
until that is fixed. If there's something wrong with the overhead electrical or anything like that. Again, the flexibility of the bus rapid transit is that at the end of the line, coming into a downtown, it could operate like a local bus system. It doesn't have to travel on a dedicated lane. It could circulate throughout the community at either end of the system.
This idea of using the spine of our entire Tampa Bay region, the interstate corridor, from St. Petersburg to the airport, to downtown Tampa, to Wesley Chapel, that's never going to change. Our whole Tampa Bay region is going to develop around that as the spine. So a rapid transit in that spine makes perfect sense. Obviously, then the feeder network and the rest of the network around it, that needs to be developed as well.
Right. Our listeners, as I said, have made a lot of comments wanting rail. Alan Petrillo proposes commuter rail or monorail, and he writes, the major problem is that the Tampa Bay area spends less on mass transit than any other metro system its size in the United States, and until that changes, nothing else will either. Unfortunately, Tampa Bay voters just seem to enjoy sitting in traffic.
Well, I think we developed in a dispersed way.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very different than some of the legacy systems, the rail systems that were built, where, or even in Charlotte that has a larger, you know, downtown work center. I mean, in Tampa Bay, we have numerous work centers dispersed. So it's very different. And you can't build, you know, rail or transit without a high cost. out into all the
diffuse area.
Right.
Right. Dennis, I wanted to ask you about this. One criticism of this plan is that transportation is quickly moving in the direction of autonomous vehicles. In Steve's piece that we heard earlier, we heard the head of T-BARTA say as much. You do research into autonomous vehicles. What do you say?
Well, I help and bring the Florida Automated Vehicle Conference here every year. The estimates are that it will be here anywhere from 5 to 40 years from now. So we certainly can't just take a step back and stop building the roads that we need or expanding the public transportation that we need to do, because it's going to be a long time before it occurs. Also, in the urban areas, you're never going to be able to serve the downtowns, especially in the bigger cities, with autonomous vehicles alone. You're still going to need premium, high-speed, high-capacity transit systems. Now, they in themselves might be autonomous in the years to come. You might have an autonomous bus.
It's going to be at least 5 years until we see this plan because of the work that has to be done on the Howard Franklin Bridge.
Right, but there's already systems out there. The city of Miami just took a trip to China to look at a technology where there is no driver. It's an autonomous bus rapid transit vehicle that follows sight lines or like a painted line on the road. It would have a right-of-way. It would follow that, but these vehicles in 5 years, maybe they don't have a driver. Maybe they are.
They could
autonomous.
Be retrofitted.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that possible, Dennis?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the discussion on autonomous vehicles is there's a lot of people out there saying that it may increase congestion. You know, you go into downtown, your vehicle takes you downtown, and then you send it back home. Well, now it's made two trips instead of one. It's just still out on what is going to happen with autonomous vehicles.
Uber will have a fleet of them, right?
So. Right, and it could be the transit agencies own a fleet of autonomous vehicles and that they're the public transportation provider of autonomy.
But there is a fear that if we sort of let the technology overtake us and have all of these Uber and Lyfts, which are already showing to have increased traffic congestion in our downtowns, all across the United States, and then add autonomous vehicles to it that are driving around all day, never parked in a parking lot. And that's one of the benefits. You wouldn't need parking lots. Is it going to create gridlock unless you have a larger vehicle that can carry more than one person in it at a time? There's really, the math doesn't work out. You need a shared use public transit component to your city if you're going to avoid basically living the rest of your life in gridlock.
Which is where bus rapid transit would come in. That's Brad Miller, the CEO of the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. We've also been speaking with Sharon Calvert, co-founder of the Hillsborough County Tea Party, and Dennis Heinbaugh, the program director for transit research at the Center for Urban Transportation Research. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we always want to hear from you. There are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or leave a comment on WUSF's Facebook page. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link to subscribe on our website, WUSF.org, or search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcast. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is Richard Jimenez. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.